Hi, this is Dark Journalist with a brief update on the history-changing revelations of Nixon's ET time capsule that was hidden in the White House, as revealed here for the first time in my exclusive interview with undercover Nixon operative Robert Merritt. Now, the National Archives has received the letter sent by attorney Douglas Caddy that explains the offer to lead the chief archivist to the time capsule and for the National Archives to take possession of the document. The only condition is that the document must be read aloud and then openly distributed to the public. Now, I'll briefly review Robert Merritt's three meetings at the White House with President Richard Nixon, and I'll bring you new excerpts of my interview with former Watergate attorney Douglas Caddy, who will explain the letter to the National Archives and much more. The powerful potential of the revelation of alien life is something that President Nixon carefully planned for, and this breakthrough may be underway as we speak. Let's start with a quick look at the life of undercover operative Robert Merritt. Undercover operative Robert Merritt had come a long way from his upbringing in West Virginia. By the time he had his three meetings at the White House with President Nixon in 1972, he had been doing undercover work as a confidential informant for the Washington, D.C. Metropolitan Police Department, the FBI, and the ATF. These assignments had him spying on different aspects of the radical groups that had caused so many problems for the Nixon administration. As a young man in his early 20s with an affable manner and friendly disposition, he could fit in almost anywhere. Later, he would be directed by these agencies to obtain lurid material that could be used to blackmail officials and congressmen. A snapshot of his covert work looks something like a mix of James Bond and government whistleblower Kathy O'Brien. In fact, his work was so pleasing to his superiors that he was profiled as the perfect candidate for something like an intelligence unit run right out of the White House called the Houston Plan. Essentially conceived as a kind of CIA just for the president, not much is actually known about this shadowy program. Some 31 pages of testimony regarding it from the Watergate era are still held under lock and key. Nixon felt he needed the advantage. Surrounded by domestic political enemies, he may have overestimated their chances for removing him in the 1972 election. Nonetheless, the Houston Plan and its star recruit, Robert Merritt, were busy performing covert operations and surveillance against Nixon's enemies. Merritt's third and final meeting with President Nixon came after the Watergate break-in. Nixon decided that Merritt was a man he could trust above anyone except his national security advisor, Henry Kissinger. He sent for Merritt in the usual fashion. After midnight, with no warning, a shadowy figure would come to Merritt's door and take him to meet with the president in a room deep underneath the White House. Nixon needed Merritt to be a courier of some special documents to a high official. The information was above top secret and referred to the UFO file. Merritt sat shocked as the president read the letter aloud. Now, Nixon was an experienced hand on managing the UFO file from his days as vice president under President Eisenhower. The government had a public program at that time called Project Blue Book, but according to several whistleblowers, Vice President Nixon personally ran the so-called CIA Blue Book cases, the real crashes hidden from the public that involved crash retrievals of exotic UFO technology. Before they said goodbye in this final meeting, Nixon told Merritt he had a special letter, a kind of time capsule, that would be discovered at a future date. This message in a bottle was hidden in plain sight right in Washington, D.C. Now, Merritt has kept these three meetings and the hidden information about Nixon's time capsule secret for over four decades. Faced with a debilitating health ailment, he has decided to disclose here, on this show, today, what President Nixon told him beneath the White House, information that will change history forever. Now, this letter was very important. Can you describe the letter for me?
There was two red lines, and it was a coded thing. And I don't know how to describe the codes to you except to say that they look like a scientific formula with letters, numbers, and other scientific symbols that would be used, like chemistry symbols. Mm-hmm. If you know what I'm talking about, because I don't even know if I could even draw them for you at this point in time, but they were very foreign to me.
Okay.
But they were something that I'm sure any college professor would understand in science and biology and chemistry. I'm sure they would understand perfectly what they were. But anyway, it was that. Plus, he was talking about, which he read to me. He said, "We have possessed knowledge." He said, "And we have in our protection." He didn't say captivity. I thought he did not. I kept thinking he said no. He said, "In our protection." He said, "Subjects from the planet X." And I asked him one question, and he didn't seem to like what I asked him, but I thought, well, I'll just keep my mouth shut. I said, "Are these the things that which you're hearing about, you know, in Mexico or Area 51? But whatever I said, he seemed to be offended by the fact that maybe I knew this or that the public had general knowledge of this.
Okay, now this is fascinating. In this final meeting with Nixon, he's reading you this letter. He shows you this formula, and he's now mentioning an alien they have in protection. And he's a little annoyed that you mentioned the being was in custody or being held.
Yes, but not the word he used was protected.
Protected.
Not captured, not in captivity. He didn't use any words that would mean they're against the will of it.
Okay.
But, I mean, obviously, I mean, you know as well as I do, if we had a being like that, yes, it would be in captivity. I mean,
yes.
I don't think we'd let it walk down the street, but... But he said that the knowledge that we had obtained from him, he said, was so vast, and he said, and so powerful. He said, whoever would possess, he said, would be the most powerful person in the entire world.
Now, from what I understand, you said he mentioned that scientists at Los Alamos had learned to communicate with this being. In your own words now, what did he say about that?
That we had obtained a very vast amount of knowledge from it, and very powerful, that whoever possessed this knowledge and was able to learn from it would be the most powerful person, most powerful nation or government in the entire world and could rule the world.
Rule the world.
He said we'd be able to do that. And then there was a handwritten letter. It was actually... two pages of that one letter, and there was a handwritten letter, he says, also to Henry Kissinger, which he did not read to me, that he said was a personal letter.
Mm-hmm.
And they were the first letter was to the American people.
And he felt that the contents were a powerful message for mankind.
Yes, he did. He did.
Now, did he ever describe the ET physically?
No.
Did he call it an ET?
He didn't refer to it that way. He did not refer to it as a creature, a monster. He didn't use any of those words. He referred to it only as a very sophisticated, very intelligent being. That's the word he used, yes.
Now we're going to play here some excerpts from my new interview with former Watergate attorney Douglas Caddy regarding his historic letter to the National Archives. Now, Doug, can you give us some idea here of the letter that you sent to the chief archivist at the National Archives regarding Nixon's secret ET time capsule?
I have written him a letter explaining the circumstances and proposing that he set up an appointment with the White House. And that he, I assume he would do it himself, he or a representative would go there and meet several of us. And I hope that you would join us, Daniel, if the meeting ever takes place in the White House, maybe.
Oh, definitely, I will.
Five or six of a little delegation from our side. I want someone from the media there to verify what went on and everything like that. And we would go to that location, and if it's there, what I propose is that if it's found that it be read aloud, to those who were assembled in that room that copies be made immediately, distributed to the press immediately, and to those in the room, and that the National Archives take possession immediately of that document.
Right.
Now, what we do know about the document is this. It's all in Nixon's handwriting. The first page, the cover page, just describes what the purpose of this letter is, okay? And the other five pages are on lined notebook paper like you would have in high school that you would just tear out, you know? And when you think about it, this, is the reason Nixon, this is in Nixon's handwriting. If he's like me, I don't want posterity to remember my handwriting where I'm writing up like this at an angle, you know? I want to need, you know? And he was thinking ahead. You know, you don't want people thinking, why is he writing at this angle? You know, he wants it even. So he used lined paper, which makes a lot of sense. And
now, everyone watching has probably seen my exclusive interview with Merritt that aired on February 14th. But in your opinion, what is in this letter?
It's an amplification of his letter to Kissinger. It's all about the alien presence. It's all about deciphering the formula or the code that was done under his administration with this help of this super being, working with the scientists from Los Alamos and doing it under his administration.
So Nixon at that point is sharing with Merritt what he thinks is a major historical step.
Right. And so Nixon said, other presidents have known what I know, but they never had the extent of knowledge that I had. He said, the CIA has given me information that has never been given to a president before, more information, vital information. And he also said at that same meeting, it was the CIA who hijacked the break-in and caused his demise. But the way I analyze it, there are so many. There is a CIA, but you have this over here and this over there, and they don't know what they're doing.
Right.
And the one that is dealing with the alien is not dealing with the break-ins or anything like that. You know, they're way above all that.
Exactly. They represent a deep, invisible arm of covert power. And of course, Nixon was in charge in the 50s as vice president of the CIA version of Blue Book, the real version. So he was in the know on this. Now, back to the time capsule and your letter on behalf of Merritt to the National Archives. What would you like to see happen here?
Well, I want the message disclosed. And doing it this way, I think it will be disclosed rather than someone really grabbing it and running out of the room saying, this is national security. Nobody will ever see this. And it's lost forever. This was not Nixon's intent. Nixon wants this message disclosed.
Right.
He told Merritt he will go down as a great, great president because of what happened under his administration with the deciphering of the code and the formula and everything else. And he's leaving this document. And when he told Merritt, that was the only time in that conversation, the last conversation, when Nixon was distraught, near tears when it started out that way, that he broke into a big smile because he felt, you know, he felt that this incredible achievement will be ultimately recognized by the world. And it was under his leadership that this happened and occurred. And so we don't want this message to disappear. And that's my great fear. And how can we stop that?
Well, there's no question that the national security objection could come in at the last minute. But let's look at the conditions set in the letter. So what are the conditions laid out in this letter to the National Archives?
The conditions are that that the group be comprised of the people from the National Archives, and part of the group, maybe six or seven people, and probably someone from the White House, too. They're people, who knows? And we all proceed to wherever it is in the White House. And if the document is found, that it be immediately we'll select someone, maybe the archivist himself, to read it out loud to those. It's only five pages. It doesn't take that long, maybe.
Right.
You know, half an hour at the most. Read the five pages out loud and then immediately take it to a copy machine and have copies made of it, multiple copies, and it be distributed to the White House press corps. And then the possession of it is taken by the National Archives.
Okay.
And the archivist is right there to take possession of it. That's what takes place. But we'll see if that's acceptable to the National Archives or to the White House.
Now, Doug, you've dealt with politics your whole life. What do you think the odds are that the National Archives and the Trump administration will respond positively to this letter?
I don't know. I just don't know. Nobody knows how they'll respond. We have a president right now who's preoccupied I hate to say that, but everything centers around him. Okay. And I would say that if this event takes place, I don't rule out that the president will be one of those people in that room.
Exactly.
When the document's found.
Yeah.
He wants to be there.
I can definitely imagine.
He may
that.
Be the one to say, I'm going to announce this.
Right.
You know? And his place in history would be secure too, because he was the one that announced the document left by Richard Nixon that brings forth all this. And so he may say this is an opportunity I cannot pass up, that history will record I'm the one who announced this finding of this document. You know,
Doug, you were the attorney for the Watergate burglars, and your best friend was E. Howard Hunt, who was the main coordinator of Nixon's plumber unit and the intelligence activities that took place there. You know a lot about those guys and how they thought, and you know a lot about Nixon himself. What do you think was happening in Nixon's mind when he left this time capsule behind?
I think he concluded this is going to come out ultimately, you know, one way or another. And he knew that he was going to be destroyed by Watergate. His reputation has been ruined forever. And this was one way to resurrect his reputation for history. That under his administration, based on the background that you trace back to 1958, even before perhaps, that he'd been on top of this subject for a long, long time, and he's seen it through to a successful end.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this would be a very, very classic thing for Nixon to do. I do believe this is the way he would have thought. We don't know what's in his mind, but to me it makes a great deal of sense, as does his letter to Henry Kissinger. Henry Kissinger was the only person he trusted. Remember, there's a picture, apparently I never saw it, but Merritt says he remembers it, of the two of them sitting and leaning on the White House in the Oval Office praying.
Yeah.
When Nixon was in the middle of Watergate praying for guidance and in salvation, you know, and so he trusted Kissinger. And Kissinger must have incredible secrets when you think about it.
Oh, yeah.
What Kissinger must know about.
Thank you for joining me, everyone. To stay updated on this important story, go to darkjournalist.com and sign up for our newsletter so you don't miss any of the exciting shows that we have coming up. There's a lot more to come. See you soon.